Most stories do not start with a journalist. They start with people noticing when a river runs dry, asking why a school is changing, discovering something new next door. Curiosity is human. Your right to keep asking questions is at the heart of NPR's mission, and we are not going anywhere.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Monday, June 29th. One measure on your upcoming November ballot could make it harder to pass other measures in the future. More on that next, but first, the headlines. Affordable housing mandates are now becoming a reality in the unincorporated parts of our county. That was first reported by the Union Tribune. Last week, the San Diego County Board of Supervisors passed a measure ruling that a portion of housing developments in unincorporated areas must be set aside for low-income residents. The concept is known as inclusionary housing policy. The UT says the new requirements apply to any projects with a minimum of 10 units in unincorporated areas. That includes Spring Valley, Buena Creek, Valley Center, and Lakeside. Additionally, it requires any for sale or rental units to set aside 5% of their total housing for those earning 50% or less of our area's median income. It's also worth mentioning that developers have the option of paying a fee or donating land to the county as an alternate to building affordable units. Supervisor Montgomery Stepp called it, quote, a tool to reduce housing discrimination socially and economically. Last week, we told you about the recent Supreme Court ruling that found the Trump administration can block asylum seekers from entering the U.S. Well, the same conservative majority that voted 6-3 on that case voted the exact same way regarding a case focused on temporary protected status, or TPS for short. The Supreme Court's ruling allows the Trump administration to end the TPS program. The temporary U.S. immigration program was intended to grant protection for people coming over from countries experiencing armed conflict or environmental disasters. TPS terms typically run for 6, 12, or 18 months at a time. Those of Haitian descent are said to be the single most represented group in the TPS category at more than 300,000. A 2025 Nielsburg population count found roughly 2,300 Haitians living here in San Diego. Following federal funding cuts, the county is stepping up to help feed those in need. County supervisors unanimously approved of a pilot program that partners with two of our regional food banks, Feeding San Diego and the San Diego Food Bank. The program will service areas with the greatest need. The county says they've identified six, quote, high-impact areas where families have been hit the hardest by CalFresh eligibility changes. The measure looks to spend $1 million over 1 year to execute things like organizing emergency distribution events, creating progress reports on the number of impacted households, and collect data to, quote, find that paying for emergency and hunger relief services is necessary. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego, now showing Giants, art from the Dean Collection, featuring art from the collection of Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys, and Hometown Heroes, a photography collection reflecting the rich culture of the border. More at mcasd.org.
A measure to increase the sales tax across the county of San Diego is on the ballot in November, but another one would make those measures much harder to pass. In this week's Why It Matters segment, Voice of San Diego's Scott Lewis explains how some last-minute negotiations could change everything about passing new taxes.
Voters across the county of San Diego will decide on a half-cent sales tax increase in November. Proponents promise it will fix the Tijuana River sewage crisis and provide child care options. But on that same ballot, voters will also decide whether these kinds of initiatives should require two-thirds of voter support to pass. The Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association qualified that measure with the support of real estate developers. But then the governor, legislature, and cities started talking to those real estate developers. They were mostly mad about Los Angeles' so-called mansion tax. It adds a big fee on the sale of super expensive homes, but also on apartment complexes. So in marathon negotiations, the developers won. They'll get some of the changes they wanted from the Manchin tax in exchange for dropping their support of the statewide initiative making it harder to pass taxes. Now, those real estate developers have pledged to try to kill the initiative that they put on the ballot. For Voice San Diego, I'm Scott Lewis, and that's why it matters.
San Diego County supervisors last week approved a new policy intended to make governing more transparent. Kevin Trevelin reports.
Supervisors have long been able to form two-member temporary subcommittees to work through one-time issues. For example, how to deal with recent federal cuts to the food assistance program, CalFresh. Unlike the full board of supervisors, though, subcommittees hadn't been subject to public transparency laws. Supervisor Joel Anderson thought that was a problem.
Frankly, I'm missing out as a board member when these things come before us and I have no way of knowing how that decision was made.
Anderson said in recent months, supervisors have used subcommittees to do major work that should be under the purview of standing committees. He introduced a policy mandating subcommittees post public notices, agendas, and meeting recordings. It passed, but not without an exemption. Supervisor Monica Montgomery Stepp introduced an amendment saying subcommittees need flexibility when dealing with sensitive issues tied to juveniles, for example.
It just gives us the latitude that we need.
Supervisors Anderson and Jim Desmond opposed the exemption as too broad, but ultimately supported the new policy. Kevin Trevelin, KPBS News.
Nearly 2 years ago, San Diego police shot beanbag rounds and released a canine on an unarmed man. Reporter Katie Heisen says on Friday, a judge ordered the city to release the footage and reports to the public.
The city paid nearly $900,000 to Marcus Evans to settle allegations of excessive force. The district attorney declined to prosecute the officers involved. But despite public outcry and public records laws, the city never released the incident records. So the First Amendment Coalition sued. David Loy is their legal director.
Whether you agree that this use of force was justified or unjustified, there's no question it was a highly significant and controversial event. And this is precisely why the people have a right to full disclosure. Because in a democracy, the people depend on telling the full truth to be able to hold the government accountable.
The judge ordered the city to release the records by July 17th.
If you don't want people to think you have something to hide, then don't hide it.
Katie Heisen, KPBS News.
Across the U.S., celebrations are underway marking 250 years since the country declared independence from British rule. But this July 4th also marks another anniversary, 80 years since the U.S. granted independence to a colony of its own, the Philippines. Reporter Corey Suzuki says the decades leading up to that moment and the ones that followed would reshape the world and San Diego.
It was the 4th of July, and crowds had filled the streets of Manila. Planes thundered overhead. Soldiers marched through the Philippines' capital city, carrying the U.S. flag. The year was 1946. For half a century, the U.S. had colonized the island nation. Now it was granting the Philippines independence. U.S. General Douglas MacArthur called it a decades-long promise.
America never wavered in that purpose. America, today, redeems that pledge.
Of course, the moment was much more complicated than that. But it was, in many ways, a turning point for U.S. immigration policy, for the growing Filipino diaspora, and for San Diego. Today, San Diego County is home to one of the largest Filipino communities in the country. And those decades before and after the treaty have a lot to do with how that happened.
It really feels like you can see the movement happening when you trace each decade.
Josen Diaz is a professor of critical race studies at UC Santa Cruz. They say those decades are written into the fabric of San Diego.
People literally coming to the shores and then ending up making the city their own. like San Diego feels like a very Filipino city to me.
The U.S. first took control of the Philippines in 1898. It was part of the peace treaty with Spain after the Spanish-American War. In the past, annexations had led to everyone becoming full citizens. But members of Congress quickly grew worried about the prospect of large numbers of new, non-white citizens. Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court created a new type of status for everyone in the Philippines, called U.S. national. Rick Baldos is a professor of American Studies at Brown University.
So they weren't citizens, but neither were they aliens. They were nationals, right? So they belonged to the U.S. They owed allegiance to the U.S., but they were not U.S. citizens.
In the 1920s and 30s, young Filipinos took advantage of their new status and began moving to the U.S. for work. In San Diego, many of them worked on farms and in canneries. Soon, though, Filipino workers faced a rise in anti-Asian racism. It was the era of the Chinese Exclusion Act. Congress had banned most Chinese and Japanese immigrants from entering the country. White nationalist leaders organized vigilante violence against Filipino communities. They also started lobbying Congress to ban Filipino people from coming to the country. But that wasn't as easy as they'd hoped, because the Philippines was part of the U.S.
One of the main takeaways for the sort of nativists who are pressing for a kind of ban on Filipino immigration is that as long as the Philippines was a colony of the U.S., Filipinos would have the right to immigrate here. So nativists end up switching gears and deciding to focus their efforts on securing Philippine independence as the really the only way to achieve their goal of exclusion.
The anti-immigrant activists started pushing for Philippine independence. In 1934, they got what they wanted. Congress passed a law called the Tidings-McDuffie Act. It laid out a decades-long path to independence, and it severely restricted Filipino people from moving to the U.S. immediately. For a while, their plan worked. The Filipino community in the U.S. stopped growing. But then, in December 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor and the Philippines.
Japan attacks the Philippines just a few hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor. And within a few months, the Japanese armed forces had routed American and Philippine forces in the islands.
Hundreds of thousands of Filipino people signed up to fight under the U.S. flag to liberate the country. After the war, many Navy sailors and their families moved to San Diego, to places like National City, San Isidro, and Paradise Hills. They started landmark community organizations like the Filipino-American Veterans Association and the Filipino-American Women's Club.
That's when the community really began to flourish.
Judy Pataxil is a professor of Filipino studies at Miramar College.
Those that were here then brought wives back and brought family and started families. And that's when the community, I believe, actually started to grow.
In the decades afterward, Congress ended strict racial limits on immigration, opening doors for many more Filipino immigrants. Families in San Diego started moving outwards into other community hubs, to Chula Vista, Mira Mesa, and Rancho Penasquitos. Today, 80 years after the Treaty of Manila, Filipino Americans are the largest Asian American community in San Diego. And you can still see all of that history here, almost like the rings of a tree. Diaz, the UC Santa Cruz professor again.
It almost feels like the Filipino diaspora is consolidated in all of its complex and deeply layered histories. All of it is in San Diego.
This week, we'll take a closer look at what it took for those generations of families to put down roots. Corey Suzuki, KPBS News.
San Diego County leaders are asking for additional public input on the future of San Pascual Academy. It's a residential program for foster youth with a high school and therapeutic services. Changes in the foster care system have led to a drop in enrollment and funding. Last month, county staff proposed winding down the program over the next 2 years. County supervisors directed staff to collect more public input. Supervisor Joel Anderson asked that future discussions include the potential closure of the academy.
You did a robust outreach, which I'm very pleased, but I'm not sure people were framed up correctly.
In-person sessions will take place on July 15th and 17th. Virtual meetings are scheduled for July 20th and 22nd. Work is now underway on a project to bring nature back to a part of City Heights while helping with flood control. On Friday, ground was broken on the project along Choyas Creek. It will involve replacing an existing concrete channel with a natural creek, along with restoring habitat and planting 300 trees. San Diego City Council member Sean Elo Rivera says it will be a return to the way things were.
The black kids and the Latino kids and the white kids from different neighborhoods would come together in nature here and play together. Before there were freeways and before the neighborhoods were separated, this is where bonds were built and where people from different backgrounds came to play and explore nature.
Groundwork San Diego Choyas Creek partnered with the city on the project. It's part of an overall effort to restore the Choyas Creek watershed, to improve the environment, and reduce flooding risk along one of the city's longest urban creeks. That's it for the podcast today. The podcast today was edited by Quinn Owen and hosted and produced by me, Lawrence K. Jackson. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties. The work of the ACLU is about closing the gap between the America that was promised and the America that is. Learn more at www.aclu-sdic.org.